This is the Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Brian Rusk.
Welcome to the Rusk Report on the Bet AM 1520, blanketing 17 states and much of Canada. Our guest today is David B. Black. He's an author and also a computer software specialist from New Jersey. He has a particular interest in voter ID and our elections. To tell you a little bit about his background, his first job was at 16, pressing sweaters in a knitting mill during the summer for minimum wage. It was a motivating experience. Later in high school, David Black started programming computers. Before graduating with honors from Harvard College, he wrote code for oil refinery optimization and the ARPA Net. He then wrote a code for compilers, composition systems, operating system, DBMS internals, and applications, large-scale financial transaction processing, document processing, workflow, and more. David B. Black, computer software specialist from New Jersey. Why are you so concerned, David, about voter ID? As I go to vote, they don't want you to show ID in New York State. They're prohibited from asking questions about that, which I can't understand, because when I go to the airport or I go to the pharmacy or the bank, they want ID. And voting is such a sacred act. I would think that should be the first place that we have voter ID. Let's talk about why you care about this, David B. Black.
Well, I've always had an interest and care about it because of the long history of voting and of getting, you know, how do people get into office. But what really got me going was Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin's pronouncement or rule or whatever it was to enforcing voter ID. And I looked into it, and I thought it was a good thing. And then the more I looked into it, thinking about it, it's sort of like, how can you not like voter ID? Just like you said, at the airport and a zillion other places, most other countries require voter ID. And yet somehow it's a state-by-state thing. And I know the history of it goes back to so-called Jim Crow laws, where requiring voter ID supposedly disadvantaged black people. But even if that was an issue, it's, you know, it's insulting of modern black people, and it's no longer the case. So why would this still be there? And as I looked into it, I realized that, yes, voter ID is important. It's a no-brainer. Everybody requires voter ID, you know, all the countries around the world, et cetera, et cetera. And by the way, they also require same-day voting, none of this mail-in BS. So would that really solve the problem? And the more I looked into it, the more I realized, yes, voter ID is important and it should be required. However, it only is one tiny, itty-bitty little step towards solving the problem of voter fraud. And the reason for this is that if you just look at the pipeline, supposedly you have to be a citizen to vote and on a federal registry of legal voters. How good is that? Well, we know that it's not as good as you would like to be. And then, so you're supposedly registered to vote, and then you show up at your voting place, and you either show your ID or you're not. If you don't show your ID, if you're required not to, supposedly they can verify you anyway by you give your name, and then they are supposed to ask you a question or two, like what's your address, where do you live, et cetera, et cetera. And that's actually, from a theoretical computer security point of view, not a bad approach, because all security is based on what you know, what you have, or what you are, or a combination of those things. What you know is like your name and address. What you have is like an ID. What you are is like your face or your fingerprints or something else about your physical appearance. So having two of those, known generally as two-factor authentication, is widely recognized as being an important thing. So you would think that at least one of those would be good. But then the more you look into it, it all comes down to other factors. And the biggest one is who's running the system. Who's running the system to get people signed up for to register to vote? And in, it's frequently bureaucracies within a state. And as we know, there are large numbers of non-citizens who have been given Social Security numbers and given licenses, driver's licenses. And so what? That's so much for, you know, valid voter ID. And then, so that's on the back end on the registering you. And then on the voting side, unlike airline travel or any of those other things, where the people doing the security are full-time employed, they're good at it, they're supervised, they don't have any particular reason to cheat. Voting is a occasional thing, happens once at a time. It's all run by localities, and they have temporarily hired people, et cetera, who are hired by locals to operate it all. And that, particularly in sort of, and that is a formula for disaster. Because you can require voter ID, but if the person who is checking your ID sort of says, show me your ID, and they glance at it, and they say, okay, go vote, but they don't do anything else, then so much for voter ID or anything else at the check-in booth. And if you, if there's one or two people could act like that, like renegades, but if you've got a whole little section that is, you know, from the top down, oh, I'm doing all the hiring and I'm going to tell them what to do, et cetera, et cetera, you have an open door policy. And they can go through the motions of voter ID so that they're not complained about, but they're also just going to wave people on through. And then it gets worse with the counting. I mean, the machines, people don't usually think about the fact that every ballot is different, because the vast majority of them have not only sort of presidential and governor and state, you know, representatives and senators for the national level, but also the state level. And they will have county commissioners and town commissioners and mayors and all that sort of stuff. So the fact is that every single ballot has local aspects and is designed by local people. And the people who set up the voting machines are local people who have to, you know, design and put in their own ballot. And guess what? Nobody's overseeing them. It's just they supposedly do a good job. And then the machines themselves have to be programmed to recognize everything, et cetera, et cetera. Guess what? Local people, again, doing the programming. And then even if they do that correctly, the machines generate a file, a computer file that has a bunch of numbers in it, et cetera, et cetera. They're not all those files are going to be different for every single district because the voting is all different. And how does the file get from the local place to the central place? How are the translations done correctly? Are they done correctly at all? Anybody with any computer expertise could go in there to such a file and mess with it, either in the machine or dump it from the machine and load it back in, or dump it from the machine and then send it on to the place it's supposed to go, et cetera, et cetera. As a computer guy, I can think of so many different ways that a corrupt back office can screw things up at scale. I mean, voter ID is just about one person showing up to vote, but you're in the, when you're in the back office, either counting paper ballots or a machine, either way, you can do things at scale, which is why you can easily read on the internet about places where they take huge stacks of ballots and send them through machines more than once. The machine should be set up to count each ballot only once and to refuse to count the extra ones. But of course, we're talking about local people there, and that's not the way they set the machines up, et cetera, et cetera. So there's so much fraud capability, and we know of huge amounts that happen that it just scares me from an election point of view. Now, from a computer software point of view, you know, the big thing is to get rid of these amateur hour, local, potentially corrupt, local little operations and replace them with centralized software of one kind or another. God forbid the centralized software should be created by a government and by RFP, the most widely used and trusted software in the world is Linux. You know what Linux is? It's open source software. It is used to power more than 90% of the web servers in the whole world. Even IBM runs it on their mainframes, for God's sakes. IBM, that just hates to run anything like this. But they have to acknowledge that open source software is the way to go. And so much of the software that we use, without even knowing it, is open source in this way. So I won't go into a discourse about open source, but the way to make all of this stuff work is to have centralized software, no local stuff, no local machines, get rid of the people doing things and having it be done by software.
Well, we're learning a great deal from a man who was so well-read on the issue of voter integrity, voter ID. Our guest is computer software specialist and author, David B. Black of New Jersey. David, is there a phone number or email if people would like to interact with you, or a website? Could you give that, please?
Sure, they can go to my website, which is www.blacklist.com, and it's spelled oddly. It's black, like the color black in my last name, and it's list, spelled like the classical music composer and piano performer Franz Liszt. So it's LISZT.com, LISZT.com, and that has all my information, more than 500 blog posts, including a bunch on voting, et cetera, and it has a way to contact me, david@blacklist.com.
Very good, and we're going to talk more about voter integrity in just a moment. Thanks to our previous guests, Toledo, Ohio, civic leader Aliyah Nadim, Mo Nalon, financial architect, Todd Blair and Robin Henke, top performers in Muskoka, Ontario. Coming up, we'll have civic leader Rick Platt of Ohio on this program, and a program on the Canadian Raceboat Hall of Fame in Bracebridge, Ontario. If you're listening in South Buffalo, Toronto, or Manhattan, drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Little plug here. On a cold autumn night, there's nothing better than sitting in a warm home with some good reading material. Now is a great time to get reacquainted with your heritage by reading the AMPO Legal. News, historic, and cultural features from the Polish-American perspective can be delivered to your door each week for 75 cents. The AMPO Legal is the way to keep up on the news in Poland and Polonia, with special features in the editions before the holidays. Get a subscription or send one to a friend. The number is 716-835-9454, or order online at ampolegal.com. Just click the subscribe tab at the top of the homepage. That's ampolegal.com, or call 716-835-9454. A little more information about David B. Black. He started working in the technology side of venture capital in the early 1900s. After helping to generate large returns for the fund, he became a GP at Oak Investment Partners in 2000, where he worked to improve the outcomes of computer-based investments, from infrastructure and tools to the consumer internet. David Black concentrated on healthcare and financial technology investments with the Oak HCFT Sector Fund until 2023. He and his lovely wife, Marta, live in New Jersey. Let's talk a little bit about what you mentioned about the mail-in votes. And I don't understand why they're doing this, because in New York State, the polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And also, people can do absentee voting if they're out of town or ill. So why do we need mail-in votes? Isn't this just ripe with fraud? I know in New York State, there was one person who got four or five ballots in the mail. Tell us about your feelings about this, David B. Black.
Well, I know that some people feel very strongly about it, and I know that they, particularly during COVID, a lot of this got instituted, and people didn't wanted to stay away from groups of other people, et cetera, et cetera. So I can understand that. But on the other hand, with early voting and lots of hours, and the fact that people are still going to we're still going to grocery stores and other essential things, and it's a one-time thing, and you can be masked up, et cetera, then it's just a bogus argument. And one of the authorities on this subject is a guy that some people have heard of. His name is Stalin. He was in control of the Soviet Union for quite some period of time, and he had strong views about lots of things. And one of them is, he said, it doesn't matter who votes. It matters who counts the votes. So Comrade Stalin, I consider to be an authority on this subject. And the absentee ballots of any kind, ballots through the mail, are opportunities for counting the vote fraud. There are there was a place that I've read about where they just decided to do a test. They called up a few, like 60 or so people who had supposedly requested mail-in ballots, and many of them had not received them, or they hadn't asked for them. And others, another couple said, oh yeah, this nice young man came along and he helped me fill out the ballot and then he mailed it for me, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it should be outlawed. There are all the countries around the world. I was in India, actually, for on voting day, and it turned out that not only did everybody have the day off, but the bars were even closed. You couldn't drink alcohol because they wanted people to be sober when they were voting, et cetera, et cetera. So there's, while there is some, you know, I can understand that people would sort of want it as a matter of convenience, but for goodness sakes, for once every year or two, get yourself down to the poll. If it matters, it matters for you to do it. A short visit once every year or two, no big deal.
Let's talk about cheating, because there's always the concern that somebody could go to five or six different polling stations in a day, give phony names, no voting ID whatsoever. And I was just at the border to Canada yesterday, and they look over my passport very, very carefully when I travel from Niagara Falls, United States, to Niagara Falls, Canada. Let's talk about cheating. What do you hear about cheating, David B. Black?
Well, they looked at, when you went into Canada, they not only looked for your passport, but I bet you anything, they registered it in a central database so that if you were to cross into Canada again, quotes and you in quotes, in a day or two, they would know that something is wrong. Did they send your passport through a machine, like did they put it on a scanner as well?
I believe they did, yes.
There you go. Even with full-time security employees, they're... Everybody's getting to the point where, yeah, they'll trust the employee to do the right thing, but let's have a scan too. And it's the same thing. I recently went to the United Kingdom, and they required virtual visas to go there. I had to take a photo of my face. I had to get it uploaded and have it approved by them, et cetera, so that I went through immigration. I had to stand in front of a machine. They glanced at my the machine looked at my face, and if it gave a thumbs up, I was okay to go. After, of course, having first scanned my passport so that they had that further identity. It's a what you have, and it's a who you are combination. So that should be the standard. And that, by the way, all that scanning and so on, that shouldn't go to local computers. That can go to central computers. And if it does, then the multiple voting is canceled. You're absolutely right about the multiple voting. I've seen a few things on X, the former Twitter, mm-hmm. where people wandered around the different Manhattan voting things, and they tried to present their ID, and it was refused, and they were allowed to vote like four or five times. And that violates, it's an odd thing that that brings up, because I've studied the regulations.
Okay.
And my biggest problem with the regulations is that they sound good. And they sound really good. Like when you vote in New Jersey, they're, you know, they're supposed to mark in their systems, on their database, the fact that you voted so that you can't vote again. But people don't do it. They just don't do it. Doesn't matter whether you have voter ID or not. So if people don't do these things, voter ID or not, then we've got a corrupt voting system. And that's one of the reasons why I want centralized, and by centralized, I mean lots of different bits of software in different places, but all controlled by different people, and they have to agree so that you can't have that one piece of software be corrupted as well. But I won't get into that.
Our guest today is David B. Black, author. He's a computer software specialist from New Jersey. If you're listening in New Jersey or West Seneca, New York, or Northern Florida, drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. And we always appreciate getting letters from our Canadian and European listeners. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. A little bit more information about David Black as he matched his own experience with that of the companies they invested in. He started to notice patterns. He first discussed the things he noticed and then put them into long emails. The emails became private circulation papers. David Black made many additions and corrections based on feedback and new experience. He started posting about the ideas at his www.blacklist, and that's LISZT.com blog. He finally released the material as the Building Better Software, Better series of books. Again, how can our listeners contact you and interact with you? What's the best way, David Black?
It's through my website, and my email is david@blacklist.com.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the trouble with most of the methods proposed regarding problems with voter integrity don't fix the problem. Could you explain that to us, David B. Black?
Yes. They're all the proposals for fixing the problem are well-intentioned, and many of them would make things marginally better. There's no doubt about that. The problem is in the back office, where you don't see, where you've got temporary employees doing the work, where you've got machines that are completely under local control, scanning or otherwise dealing with, you know, paper ballots on machines that are unique to each election. I mean, every town has its own town councilors, and so the ballot has to reflect those. And so all of this local control stuff is where the corruption problem takes place, whereas most of the people who have been focused on improving election integrity are focused on things like voter ID. I'm not saying voter ID is bad, but I'm saying that it only is a baby step towards fixing the problem. It leaves the vast, vast majority of the problems unsolved.
Let's talk about the checking of people to vote. Again, when I went to vote, a very nice woman was there at the polling place, but she said, I'm not allowed to look at your voter ID, when I would think that should be her job to check the voter ID to make sure it's authentic, just as I go to the pharmacy to get a prescription. I would think voting is more sacred than going to the pharmacy. Let's talk about who is doing the checking on people voting in. How do you see it, David B. Black?
Well, it's not just who, but it's the state regulations. I mean, the nice lady who checked you in was correct. She is literally not allowed by New York state regulations, or same thing in California, to ask for your ID. What she is supposed to do is ask you for information about yourself to validate that you are who you are. Did she ask you for your name?
Yes, she asked for the name and the address, but she said she's not allowed to look at my ID.
Right, so she asked for the address. You gave it? Did she look like she was looking up your address?
Yes, she did, but I could have been somebody from Argentina.
Of course, I agree.
She did not look at any ID. I could have just flown in from Buenos Aires.
Yep, you're absolutely right. That would have taken a little bit of work on the Argentinian's part, because he would have had to know that you were a voter and that this was your local polling place and that this is your name and this is your address. Well, as I researched, it turns out that the state and county officials who are in charge of voter rolls make that information available. I checked it out, and I found my name and address and my wife's on publicly available as a voter. So this makes it so easy just to show up. And by the way, voter ID is so easy to fake. It's unbelievable. There are whole companies that, for example, there's a company that we invested in called Authentix, and there's others that will take scans of IDs that look good, but when you look into them, they've actually been faked, either by putting in a different face or whatever it is. It's actually not that hard to do if you have the skills to do it. And given that you can get the local information about the name and address of the voter, then you just take the visiting person from Argentina, you get their picture, boom, boom, 10 or 15 minutes, and you hand them the idea, and away they are off voting in a half a dozen different places because they're not doing the have you already voted check properly, et cetera, et cetera. So voter ID is good, but it's so easy to fake, it's unbelievable. All the information required for it is available, and you're only going to stop the massive problems in the back office.
Yeah, I'm sorry we have to bring the Rusk Report to a close. We've learned so much from an expert on voter integrity. He is a computer software specialist from New Jersey, David B. Black. He is also an author. Again, if you're listening in the areas of the 17 states we cover and much of Canada, just drop us a note to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520 Radio, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Thank you for enlightening us, computer software specialist David B. Black. Have a great week.
You've been listening to The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at the Western New York community with news, features, and special guests. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Brian Rusk, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.